is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 319. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
NFC West title, back where it belongs, baby. This is a good podcast to do today. I wasn't sure we were going to be able to do this. Thought we might have a different result going into this game. But I am very pleasantly surprised with the fact that we beat the catfish Rams.
The Seattle Seahawks are NFC West champions, and they do it with a 20-9 win over the division rival Rams. And yeah, like you said, it's one of those things where when you are routinely beat by one team, you know, a lot like the 49ers are routinely beat by the Seahawks, like you just get used to expecting that feeling. And so even though that Jared Goff has struggled against multiple teams this year, there was that concern that maybe we would see the good version of Jared Goff this past Sunday. But no, we got the version that so many other teams have faced this year.
Yeah, it wasn't so much about the Rams at all, as far as where my concern level was coming from. My concern level was coming from how the team has been playing going into this game. And so I want to start out by enjoying this for a second, being happy and kind of relishing in having the NFC West title back in Seattle before we kind of get into the rest of the game. Because a lot of mixed emotions still after watching that game.
Still yes. Mixed emotions.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
you don't?
You know what? I think that is a discussion to have as we go through this. But yes, let's first talk about this win. Because for the first time since McVay began coaching the Rams, I felt, Adam, like the defense finally showed what I thought that they should be able to do against this Rams offense. Every single time we play the Rams, I'm like, this is how you beat the Rams. You get pressure on them and you cover the dudes that Goff likes to throw to every time he boots out. And it just doesn't seem like it's that hard of an offense to defend. And yet every single time they've played them, somehow the Rams pull things out. So that's kind of what I was getting to with my intro. But this time the defense lived up and matched my expectations of what they should be able to do.
Well, the cool part about this game is that the defense validated itself with its improvement over the last however many weeks you want to say, since the second half of the first Rams game, right? And we've all been kind of having that come to Jesus moment of, oh no, this defense is actually good now. And we're all kind of getting there at different times. But I think this is the game that we can all look at as a fan base, all of us 12s, and be like, all right, I believe in this defense. And it's playing up to the standards that you thought with the talent that's there that they could always play up to. And you're right. Finally, they took care of that Mickey Mouse, Sean McVay, bull catfish. Defend the stretch zone run. Cover the boots. And when it's, you know, he does boot out, you only have half the field to defend. And just cover all three levels. Give him nothing. And force him to run. And he'll melt down. And then also knock the snot out of him. And they did all of that. And you saw that the additions of Adams and Jordan Brooks made a difference in containing that Rams offense. And these are the things that Schneider was looking at when he went through this last offseason and brought these guys in. And it was awesome to finally see it all work out, because it has been so frustrating over the last 3-4 years to see this defense struggle against this Mickey Mouse offense.
And they were able to get to Jared Goff, only completed 24 passes on 43 attempts, so barely over half of his attempts, 234 yards. And then, Adam, you talk about how that pressure gets to him, how him having to either run or make some decisions, it makes him crumble, and it leads to plays like this.
Play fake, Goff rolling right. Looking, still looking, being chased. Now he throws back inside, and it's intercepted down at the 10-yard line. Coming the near side, it's Diggs. He's across the 20, still on the move, 25-30. Breaks a tackle out to the 35. Jared Goff had all kinds of room to throw a nice, easy pass, and instead pulled the trigger and threw it right to Diggs.
Quandre Diggs getting the interception.
Pro Bowler Quandre Diggs.
That's right.
And yeah, living up to the billing in this game. And the defense, you felt like throughout the game, was in control of their half of the game. And There were times, though, where you're like, oh, here we go. We're bending, and hopefully they just don't break again. And they never did. And I guess the epitome of that would have been the goal line stop.
Yes, that goal line stop. It comes after Russell Wilson gets the first touchdown of the game. That first drive coming out of halftime, that was nice to see. You had the long 45-yard pass to David Moore down the sideline, finally getting a big play on that drive. And then, yes, for the defense to respond on that next drive, yeah, it gave up a third and three to Gerald Everett. And that was really the only third down that they gave up on that particular drive. So they were, you know, cruising right along down to the goal line. But it was that first and two. You see Jordan Brooks get the tackle for a loss on first down. On second down, you have Jamal Adams coming around the right side and getting Malcolm Brown from behind to knock him down short of the goal line. And then on third down, Jared Goff, they try the sneak up the middle. I was shocked that that didn't work because they were so close. I mean, they were just inches away. And for the defensive line to give that kind of push to keep Goff out of the end zone on that third down. And then fourth and one, KJ Wright comes up big, blows up the tight end into the backfield. Jordan Brooks again making his second tackle of that series. And even Jordan Brooks was credited with the tackle on the run by Goff. So three plays by Jordan Brooks in that four-play sequence.
Yeah, and Jamal Adams had that great play there. And it was kind of the epitome of his effort and what he brings to the table. But what was cool about that play was that the one adjustment that the Rams had made that actually worked in the second half was running the stretch play to the right. And they were getting a couple tight ends to that side and either doubling or tripling KJ or whoever was on the edge and sealing them off hard and trying to make the corner come down to flow to take the edge away. And then they had one extra blocker to blow him out. And that was the one play that was working for him.
Yeah, that play worked for him really well on that drive.
Yeah. And Jamal Adams had had enough of that bullshit.
Catfish!
And he came in and cleaned up the mess. And then the idea that the defense decided that not today, we're just not dealing with this crap today. I'm sick of these guys. We're keeping them out no matter what. You've heard them all say just a blade of grass is all they need. And that was cool. That was what the defensive old used to do, right? Well, this whole game, hold them to 9 points, make Goff look uncomfortable the whole time, and really make McVay look a little stupid. And that was so gratifying. When the day was done, there's no doubt about it. And they kept us in the game and allowed the offense to do just enough to get us the win. Like I said, it's so freaking satisfying to beat them, get the NFC West title, and know that now the Rams might not even make the playoffs.
Yes, if the Chicago Bears are able to beat the Green Bay Packers this Sunday, then it would be loser goes home between the Rams and Cardinals. And gosh, that would be wild. Either one of those teams is knocked out of the playoffs. I think that that would help make my Sunday. But mm-hmm. we could talk a little bit more of that in the second half. Let's talk a little bit more about this Rams game. Jason Bonner comes in with an email, says, when the Seahawks and Lambs were coming back for the second half, Aaron Andrews on the broadcast said something along the lines of how McVay was so upset with how his team played and that they needed to get it going. Then she said how Pete said he was fine with the game and was comfortable with where they were at halftime. It occurred to me that regardless of how annoying and stressful these close, down-to-the-wire games can be for us fans, they don't stress out Pete, Russ, or seemingly the rest of the team. I think that calm mentality helped us win today and has helped us win lots of other games over the years. It may not be the style that a lot of us want, myself included, but I'll take the wins any day, and I'm fine with Pete winning his way. Go Hawks, from Jason.
Yeah, Jason sums that up pretty good. And they are. This team, the core of this team anyways, is very used to Pete ball. And it's clear, and especially listening to Pete in the last few press conferences, that after Russ had that four-game stretch of turnovers, he was just like, enough of this. We're not playing this way anymore. I can't stand it. We're not doing it. We're doing it my way. And one of the things I wanted to say today going into this show was let's give Ken Norton some credit, because we all were just dumping on him at the beginning of the season. Oh, yeah. And now he's got this very much turned around. But then I started thinking about it and was like, does he? Was it him? I don't think it is. This feels like Pete.
I think you can give credit to both.
Okay, cool. All right, we'll give credit to both. And then on offensively, they're definitely playing Pete's style of football, being very conservative, not taking shots. And you see Russ on almost every dropback, holding the ball, double clutching. He double clutched so many times in this game where you'd see him start to pull the ball back to let it go. Nope, don't take that risk. And he was always waiting until he could see it wide open instead of anticipating things. It is Pete Ball. Don't turn the ball over, play conservative on offense, play good defense, and, you know, win tight games. It is frustrating because I feel like we should be able to have our cake and eat it too here. Why can't
you
we
want
have
both? You want both the things.
Yeah. I want to play good offense and good defense at the same freaking time. Is it too much to ask for?
Well, we almost saw Russell early on in this game where he probably should have double clutched it, almost throw an interception when he was trying to throw to Tyler Lockett on 3rd and 5. And Darius Williams almost stepped in front of one.
That was his first throw of the game, was it not?
It was. They ran on the first two downs with Chris Carson. They had a short 3rd and 5 and he nearly throws a pick.
Yeah. And then not only that, but they ran that same play when they were pinned back on the one on like the 2nd or 3rd down. I don't remember which it was.
Yeah.
And clearly the Rams had watched tape on that play and they knew that was Russ's hot receiver. And they tried, almost damn near jumped it again. But from there on out, Russ was accurate, kept us on schedule for the most part. 3rd down was tough. I would like to talk about 3rd down defensively and offensively. Okay. Because defensively, especially in the first half, it was so freaking frustrating to give up 3rd down after 3rd down. And not only that, but give up, it's 3rd and 11. They give up 11 and a half yards. It's 3rd and 4. They give up 5 yards. It's 3rd and 6 and they give up 6.25 yards. Like they'd always just give up just enough for the Rams to get their freaking first downs.
Right.
And it was always Cooper Kupp. And nobody seemed to kind of key in on that in the whole first half.
Well, there was that. And there were some downs. You know, you go to that first 3rd and 11 where it's on the 2nd drive for the Rams for the day. And they have a 3rd and 6. And then they get a delay of game. So then it's 3rd and 11. And what do? They drop back 8 guys into coverage rather than trying to get after Goff. And that was the frustrating thing to me, is that you know how to get Goff messed up. You get pressure on him. And yeah, there is a certain type of pressure by dropping 8 guys into the zones and trying to give him smaller windows to throw to. But I feel like the pressure that really gets him off his mark is when you start sending extra guys or just winning with your front four, and you're not going to win with just 3.
No, you're not going to win with just 3. And look, as much as I hate Jared Goff as a football player, I'm sure he's a fine person, but sports hate the guy.
We saw some toughness from him in this game.
Cool. That was another one of those like Troy Aikman catfishing all over Jared Goff's toughness. Like, good Lord. I we'll get to the broadcast here team in a little bit, because it was there were interesting choices all day. But as far as Goff goes and the pressure, if you only rush 3 and he can hit his back foot and be on time, that whole lanky motion of his all comes together and he can throw through tight windows. He can find that guy that beats coverage after 4 or 5 seconds of running around, right? And a guy's going to beat coverage after 4 or 5 seconds.
Well, and nobody had to beat anybody the way that they dropped back into defense. They just had 5 guys standing on the, you know, the first down line. And then you had Rams receivers, you know, kind of stacked up in between those. And as soon as Goff started to break out on that particular play, Rashim Green, who had dropped, he then starts rushing Goff to try and get after him, because you know, the line had kind of broken down and opened up a hole. And then so as soon as that happened, then he had 2 guys to choose from, where he just had to, you know, drive the ball in between relatively tight windows, but it was doable. And we saw him make it with Kupp.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what I was getting at. Now, if you can get him off of his spot and start making him make decisions on the run, his whole motion, everything about the way he throws the football looks like an unfolding lawn chair.
Right.
Like it's, he looks like
he did on that interception. You know, he was just trying to do a little loft pass to Robert Woods on that play, and he overthrew him by a mile right to Quandre Diggs.
Right. And he looks like a baby giraffe when he runs too. I mean, it's just, it's so awkward. It was hilarious to see the Seahawks finally on those boots be like, okay, we're just covering the receivers. The three receivers and the three zones and run it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Try it.
Do it. I dare you. And he pooped his pants about every time. It was great.
He did get a couple short yardage runs.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, he wasn't picking up first downs routinely or anything like that.
No, he can't. It's a huge limitation in his game. And the Rams are screwed with that contract because he is not the type of quarterback that you're going to be able to win with over the next 5 years. It's just not the way the NFL works anymore.
Yeah. Well, so we talked a little bit about that third down defense, especially on that second drive where they end up getting the 44-yard field goal. On their other drive, I think they gave up 1 3rd and 4, so that one wasn't so bad. I guess the one with the interception, they gave up, I think it was just 1 3rd and 3 on that drive. Mm-hmm. But that was the drive where you had Ryan Neal roughing the punter, which extended that drive. So luckily, Diggs able to bail out Neal there by getting the interception. Otherwise, you know, if they're able to drive down and get a touchdown on that drive when, you know, you should have had him off the field on 3rd and 7, that would have been frustrating.
Look, I'd get on Ryan Neal's case, but he knew it immediately. It's not like he was like, what do you mean? What do you mean I can't do that? Like he was
trying to dive and block it. And he tried it. And that's what happens sometimes when you're going for it. Because it is really hard to make that just the right angle to try and block and not run into the punter.
Right. He just bounced wrong off the ground. It's tough. That's the way it goes sometimes. Was it infuriating? Was I angry? Absolutely. Those timely mistakes are something that hits this team quite frequently, right? It always seems like these penalties pop up like the least opportune times this year, but they still managed to overcome. And they managed to overcome on defense. And really, in the second half, they were much better on third down. The offense, however, was pretty well trash on third down the entire game.
No, I don't think so. I think that was trash in the first half. I thought the second half was better. They finished the game 8 of 17 on third down.
Yeah, that's not good enough.
It's better under than 50%? We've seen from them sometimes.
Yeah, cool. That's still not good enough. Especially when most of those third downs were like third manageable, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 8, you know, 3rd and 4. They, you know, crap like that. And Russ drops back to pass and one guy breaks down every single third down and he ends up getting sacked. I'm sick and tired of watching Russ go down on third down. How many times was he sacked on third down in this game? 5?
Okay, let's go through it because, okay, the first 3rd and 5 was the one to Lockett that was nearly picked. So that third down was, I guess you could put that on a Russ decision because that was the right play call, right? It had a quick throw to, you know, just in case if the pocket was breaking down, he had an outlet.
I'd credit the Rams defensive coordinator on that one. That they had clearly studied the tape on that one.
They did their work. Okay. 3rd and 3, Russ sacked by Sebastian Joseph for minus 10 on the next drive. That leads to a punt. So there's the first Russ sack. The second, he had a 3rd and 6. That was one that picked up. That was Greg Olsen's only catch of the day. Then on 3rd and 9, sacked by Leonard Floyd, which led to a field goal.
You mean Russell Wilson ran right into Leonard Floyd and went down.
Yeah, there were a couple of those.
Yeah.
The next one was incomplete pass to Greg Olsen. And I think that was one that was, again, it was a well-defensed play where the guy came in for a pass breakup. Although you could maybe say that Olsen should have hung on to that one. Those are ones usually Greg gets.
Yeah.
Looking at the next one, he did have a DK pass on 3rd and 6 for a first down. Then another Leonard Floyd sack that led to the second field goal.
There's three.
And then, oh my gosh, that drive right before the end of the first half was infuriating.
Oh man.
You had 3rd and 3 where they hand it off to Hyde and they get 6 yards to get the first down. They take their final timeout. They have a first and 10 with 23 seconds left to go. And mm-hmm. Russ runs it up the middle. And then they have to get up to the line. They spike the football with 6 seconds left. And then they run a give up play to close out the half.
Didn't they just kneel? I thought they just knelt.
No, it was a draw play to hide.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It felt like a kneel. I remember being just infuriated at the idea that we run up to the line of scrimmage and spike the ball to save the 6 seconds and then just go, meh, don't want to try anyways.
No, it was a draw, but it was Aaron Donald and Lewis were right there to be right on top of him.
You're not going to score on a draw play with 6 seconds left from what, your own 37 or 35, whatever it was?
Yeah, they're on the 35.
Okay. I feel like you could at least just bomb one down there and see what happens.
Right? Yeah. If you pick up a penalty or something.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst thing that happens is you get sacked or maybe there's a sack fumble or something like that. You do want to avoid that.
You do want to avoid that. But again, like, put the pedal on the metal, man. Like, what? There's so little downside to just hucking it up there in comparison to the possible upside.
I don't know why Russ even decided to run it on the first down play. Why not just chuck it out of bounds or something? It was weird.
I don't know.
But then here's where my favorite third down play of the day, Adam. It's the first third down coming out of the half. Third and 8. And Russell Wilson does this.
And Russ is going to scramble near side. Going to throw downfield. David Moore reaches up and makes a catch. Holy catfish, what a catch. He had a man in his face. Darius Williams, how he reached back and kept his feet in bounds, I have no idea. I was afraid there might be a holding call as well, but nothing flag thrown. And so a huge gain for the Seahawks.
Yeah, they probably held Aaron Donald on that play. Our one break. We got a break.
Got a break. Fine. You said that was your favorite third down of the game offensively when Russ did that. That is, to me, it's one of the more perplexing third downs of the game. I don't understand. I love the result.
Yeah.
I love the result. And it was fun. But early in the play, Lockett runs across or right to left. He's wide open. He can pick up the third down right there if Russ just pulls the trigger and hits him. But doesn't. Then he breaks the pocket to the right. Has nothing but green grass. He could have ran it for 20 yards.
Yeah, he could have ran for the first down.
That's a surefire first down. Uh-huh. But doesn't do that. Instead, on the run, rolling to his right, he decides to loft it up to David Moore, who's covered pretty well on a, I'll say 50-50 is being generous, jump ball. And that was the decision out of those three options. That's what you choose?
Yeah, I like the result.
I like the result, but I don't understand the thought process there. I don't get it. This is where I'm having a problem with the offense and the way Russ is playing. On the times where it feels like it's obvious to take the risk and the shot, he won't do it. But then on the times when it's like, wait a second, this is the time you don't need to take that risk at all and just keep the drive alive. And even have a big play if he just runs it. It's still a big play.
And I think that you're right to crush him on this because if Moore does not catch that football, we would absolutely be crushing him for it, right? So
yes.
You want to do it either way, especially when he was 0-for-3. He should have hit Hollister, even though, you know, the
I do not put that one on Russ.
The linebacker made a good play to hit Hollister right at about 6-7 yards.
Right when he's trying to make his turn to cut up field, and it delays him half a tick. Yeah. But with the way Russ threw the ball, that makes it so that there's no way that's going to be complete.
Because he threw it on the rope.
Exactly. If he'd put a little more air under it, because there was room between the corner and the safety there where he could have taken some off of that, and he still could have hit Hollister.
That would have given Hollister a little extra room for an adjustment.
Yes, in time to get there.
Yeah.
Because he got knocked off his spot.
Or time to come back to it if he hadn't got knocked.
Right. So that's maybe like 50% Russ's fault on that one.
Okay. And then I guess while we're talking deep balls, the 0-for-3 in the first half, the second one was a deep shot to DK down the right side. And that one was coming as the pocket was breaking down. You had Abuehi, you know, just getting pushed back into Russ. And you had Aaron Donald, who gave a ridiculous swim move to Simmons that put Simmons face down on the turf. And so you had Posick trying to block two guys with two arms and, you know, collapsing Posick back into Russ. So Russ didn't really have a whole lot of time to get rid of that football and make it as accurate as he could.
Exactly. I kind of wish I would have gone back and watched that play specifically, because I feel like when I watched it in real time, the pocket had collapsed around Russ so much that you couldn't even see him. You just saw his arm come up over the top of everybody and the ball pop out.
Yeah, you know? I don't know if it was quite that bad, but it was smart of him. I mean, considering the move that Aaron Donald put on Simmons, he needed to get rid of the ball about as quick as he did.
Right. And again, in that case, I think if he had had a little bit cleaner pocket, he would have placed that ball more inside and DK would have scored.
Yeah.
Because that's all he needed to do. He just needed to put it more towards the middle of the field and DK would have got it. That's the leverage he had.
And then that third one was that deep shot on second down on that very final drive before he had Russell, you know, running up the middle and spiking the ball and all that stuff. And he just overthrew Lockett, which that was a really deep throw.
Yeah, it was a really deep throw. The problem with that one is that he let it go a whole beat too late. If he throws that earlier, and he could have easily, he'd already hit his back foot. He was in the pocket. He saw him.
Yeah.
And he hesitated and then threw it so late that he had to give it everything he had. And it just made it so that he couldn't time that out well. Mm. Like if he throws that a half a beat earlier, that's a completion. And that one really frustrated me because of all the hesitancy that you had seen in his play throughout the first half. And it's like, look, the pocket's actually clean here. The decision is easy. The Lockett's open. This is what you were doing the whole first half of the season. Throw the ball.
So, yes, that was maybe the most frustrating of the misses. Fortunately, he does hit more. It makes his stat line look much better for the day by having that one deep shot. Because going into the half, he was like at 4 yards per attempt, which is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole first half, the Rams gave the Seahawks a healthy dose of zone defense, just straight up zone defense that we've been seeing. And they went right to the same game plan that they've had the last few weeks, dink and dunk, and just because they were so afraid of that defensive pass rush.
Although I thought that they could have run the ball a whole lot more in that first half.
Not only could they have run the ball more, but they could have run the ball more up the middle.
Right. Yeah, because the way that the defensive ends were lining up so far outside to try and contain Russell Wilson inside the pocket.
Absolutely. And not only that, but just look at the results from the first half or the whole game. Where were all their most effective runs? They were up the middle and it wasn't even close. Now, they got stuffed a few times, and I don't know if every play that went outside was called to go outside. I mean, there could have been times where one of the backs had decided to bounce it outside. But this is something that's been bothering me for a couple games now with the offense. It's like, look, the strength of this team is running it right behind Damian Lewis. Do it. Run it up the middle.
Yeah, I think that they could have done that more in the first half. I was happy, though, with 6-6 tie going into the half. It felt like because the defense was handling itself so well. Do you want to continue to go through some of these third downs in the second half? Because really, my two favorite third downs were on that same drive when Russell Wilson was able to scramble away, get the little dump off pass to Carlos Hyde, get the 18 yards. That was a huge play that ultimately led to the Russell Wilson touchdown.
I can't believe that your favorite third down isn't the slant to DK when he dump trucks DJ Reader.
Yeah, that was a good one too. Was that
his one was big... awesome. It was awesome. I loved it, man. Watching DK, we could, for a few reasons, this is why I loved it. Number one, when he catches the ball, he immediately turned and went straight forward. Okay. He wasn't screwing around. He wasn't doing the reverse spin stuff that all of our receivers have done since Doug Baldwin apparently taught it to everybody forever. Like they weren't doing that.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Put his foot in the ground. He looked DJ Reader in the eyes. He put his helmet right in the middle of his chest and he catfished. He dump trucked him. And then at the end of it, when DJ Reader tried to steal the ball from him after the play was long since dead, he gave him the stiff arm, man, and just like bounced him off of him. It was awesome.
Yeah,
I love that. Right. It was attitude. It was swag. It had everything with the sense of, you know what? Screw this. We're sick of you guys. We're winning this game. Catfish.
catfished
off.
Catfished
the Rams. That's what that play felt like.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you're compiling DJ Reed with Troy Reader, but
Reader.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I literally thought Reader's first name was just DJ. I mean, who cares? He's a stupid Ram.
He's a stupid Ram. Why do we care about their first names?
Yeah.
So there was, and then that one led up to the Jacob Hollister touchdown. So yeah, that was a good play too. I enjoyed also while we're thinking about third downs, I like the third down where DK got it running up against Jalen Ramsey, because they had, it was a 3rd and 10 and Russ drops back. He hits his back foot. DK Metcalf, because they were lining up the ends so far to the outside, Metcalf pushes Floyd as he comes off of the line and redirects him to the outside, which gave Abwehi a little bit extra time because they had sent a blitzer, and DK just cuts inside to that little zone vacated by the blitzing linebacker. Ramsey can't get there that quick, but he's able to fight through the tackle by Ramsey to still pick up the first down. Now, it ultimately led to that 3rd and 1 where Carson picks up the 1 yard, but then DK Metcalf gets called for the illegal shift.
Ticky-tack call. Correct call. DK needs
because really illegal shifts, that's so you don't start moving to either catch the football or try and get in position for a block. They don't want players moving to try and gain an advantage on a defense.
I mean, technically it's correct. There was a lot of these sort of calls throughout the game. And I just want to touch on the refs for just a half second because I don't want to harp on it. But
yeah,
God, the officiating sucked. And it was definitely one-sided. And because there was a lot of calls that maybe technically were correct, but that you just don't see called very often. Like they, because it has to work in LA.
I got that feeling too. I'm going to save officiating for later in the show.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that that's where that would come up, but yeah, that was frustrating. DK with the untimely penalty, just when you think they're going to kind of put their foot on the throat of the Rams. Eventually they did. They score on that final drive, and it was just, the sense of relief and satisfaction was so large. I was so happy. And I think this might be the end of Jared Goff's time with the Rams.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You think we ended Garoppolo's time in the 49ers and Jared Goff's time with the Rams in the same year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next year it'll be Kyler. Well, we'll clean house, you know, but yeah, I think this could be the last of that you see of Jared Goff as the starter for the Los Angeles Rams.
Especially when his backup's going to come in and perform, you know, he's going to be able to do those boots and throw 5-6 yard passes just as well as Goff can.
Yeah, he can play like crap just like Goff.
Because Wolford is a professional quarterback. He played in the AAF.
Sure. So why pay Goff? What, $24 million or whatever it is that he's paid?
Don't they have to pay him next year anyway? Aren't they in the same situation like the Eagles are with Carson Wentz, where they have to pay him next year?
Yeah, but here's the thing. He sucks. So it doesn't really matter. Like, why have him around? Maybe trade him for a draft pick or something. You could probably get a fifth for him.
Maybe a fifth? Like, that's anything. Although, hey. Look, if Bill O'Brien were still in the league, maybe he gets a coaching job somewhere and he'll trade for Jared Goff, give up a fifth just to take on that huge contract.
If Bob was still the coach of the Texans, he would just straight up trade Goff for Watson and call it good.
Right. Well, Adam, there's another thing I wanted to talk to you about with this game, because I am a little bit curious, and I don't know if you were talking about, if this is what you're getting at when you were talking about this earlier, but was this game really all that different from the Washington game? You had the offense scoring 20 points. You had your opponent scoring 3 times. Yes, the defense was able to hold them to field goals instead of touchdowns in a couple cases, but still 3 scores by the opponent. They stopped a scoring drive with an interception in the red zone. Did that against Washington, did that here against Goff. And then you had the defense stopping a critical 4th down play. All these similar things happened. They just happened in a different order.
Yeah, that's why I still have mixed feelings. Like, this game was just like the Washington game, and that doesn't make me feel good, because this is the most perplexing Seahawks team I think I have ever watched in my life. Maybe schizophrenic is the more correct term. I can't remember a team that I've been a fan of and watched intensely start out so hot on one side of the football, this year being offense.
Yeah.
And totally crater to where you have very little confidence in him going down the stretch, and then watch the other side of the ball be a complete dumpster fire and then turn into one of the best units in the league going down the stretch. Uh-huh. And on such a steady trend both directions. Like, it's not like there's been a lot of ups and downs. They're like, it's kind of steadily trending those two ways for each side of the football. And it's so maddening to just be like, look, I just wanted the defense to play up to the potential of the talent on there early in the year. Now they're doing it. Cool. Thanks for that. Then I just wanted the offense to keep playing up to the potential of the talent that they have going down the stretch. And they haven't. Like, why?
I felt like that the offense, it could have continued on that same trajectory had not Carson and Hyde both got injured in the middle of the season.
Back for weeks.
Oh, I know. And I think that they could do those similar things on offense that they did early on in the season. Now, because those guys are back.
Why aren't they doing it?
I don't know. Because Pete likes to play.
Why does Russ look like he can't make a decision for his life?
Last week, you said that was because of Pete. And I think you have to put a little bit of the blame on Russ, don't you?
Maybe. I don't know. But so that was my crap on the offense part of the podcast real quick. Uh-huh. Let me give you the other side of the coin, the other way that I'm feeling about this. This offense is just fine. This is actually going to be totally fine when the playoffs arrive. I mean, think about it. They steamroll the Jets after, you know, putting up a stinker against the Giants, right?
Right.
They look like the offense of old and all that. And then they play probably the two best defensive lines in all of football back to back.
Right.
Which really that matchup is a nightmare for them when you think about the overall weaknesses of the Seahawks team. They're probably their biggest weakness right now is offensive line. And it's either that or pass rush, right? And they kind of have pass rush figured out a little bit.
They've had one of the best pass rushing teams since the middle of the season.
Right. So I think that kind of puts me at a place where I would say the weakest link right now is offensive line with Shell being out and Upati being out. So they go up against two really good defenses that are well coached. I mean, Ron Rivera is a good coach. The Jack of the River is a good coach. The Rams have been a good defense for a couple years now. They're loaded with talent. I mean, they're the number one defense in the league. And right. Yet the offense found a way to not turn it over and put up enough points to cover the defense's back and get big time wins. Maybe this offense will be just fine going to the playoffs because guess who they're not going to see again? The Rams or the Washington football team.
They might see the Rams.
No, they won't.
They might. It could work out. We might see the Rams in the first round of the playoffs.
No, I don't think that's all that possible.
You don't think that they can beat Arizona with no Kyler Murray?
Kyler's going to play.
Is he?
Yeah.
So you think the Cardinals being in the playoffs is a lock?
Well, I mean, I think the Cardinals win that game. I think there's a solid chance that the Rams don't even make it. And even if the Rams make it, the way the seating all shakes out, we might not even see them until round two.
They might work out that way.
Yeah. And are they really winning a playoff game with Wolford as their quarterback? I doubt it. Yeah,
maybe Goff makes it back.
What I'm trying to say is that was a cherry on top game of this season because we beat the Rams. It's the last time we'll have to see them this year. We're not going to see them again. We're not going to see the Washington football team again. So really the rest of the defenses in this league, this offense could look closer to what they did against the Jets than they did against the last two opponents.
So do you not want to see the Bears then since they have a pretty good defensive line?
I don't want to see the Bears because I just don't like the Bears. I don't like their brand of ball. I don't like their city. I don't know. I've never been to Chicago, but I don't know. I don't like the Bears. They're a boring franchise to me.
I kind of want to see the Bears because it means that they've beaten the Packers in week 17. And that's the only reason.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm agnostic on the Bears. I don't care about
the
Bears.
You know what? We can talk more playoffs. We have to talk about the week 17 game coming up.
Before you get into week 17.
Okay.
We need to talk about the most dominant player in special teams right now. The guy that is just lighting up the league. Jason Myers, our field goal kicker, man, nails them all through again this week.
I thought you were going to say Michael Dixon. He was nailing his punts. Every single one of them was inside the 20, except for the one where they were way backed up. And then they should have gotten the turnover on that play. The Rams caught a break there because our dudes were on top of the football, and yet they awarded the ball to the Rams.
Yeah, well, okay, that's a whole other thing. Again, that was that ref situation. But Dixon shanked at least one punt this year. Zero shanks for Myers.
Zero
shanks. He's the most dominant special teams player in all of football right
now. Yeah, and yet not in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, snubbed. Okay, now you can go on to week 17.
Okay. The Seahawks, they're closing out the season, Adam, the regular season, taking on their newest division rival, the Glendale Salas.
How long did you work on that one?
I had that one written maybe this morning.
Okay. All right.
It started to get me there after watching the Niners play the Cardinals because holy smokes, Robert Saleh on that broadcast, it was like every other shot was the reaction shot of the sideline.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they really want to get him a head coaching job this year. It was a lot like the telecast with the Rams game, man. I would bet if you went back and you actually tracked it, the amount of time they showed close-ups or sideline shots or anything like that of the Rams and then that of the Seahawks, I'd be willing to wager it's probably 4-1.
They had like, that many shots of the Rams sideline?
Oh my God. And they would not stop talking about the Rams. And the Rams, like, one of the things that was making me so angry, catfish! They even had that stupid Christmas cartoon at the beginning of the game of the Rams maybe making the playoffs or something. Like, going into this game, the story should have been, the Seahawks win today, they clinch the NFC West. No. The story of the game was, and all they could talk about was, if the Rams win this game, they're still in the running for the NFC West and, for the playoffs as well.
Yeah.
That was it. That's all they talked about. I think they mentioned once that we could, if we won the game, we'd win the NFC West.
Well, fortunately, it doesn't matter. The Seahawks, they locked up the division, and now they could potentially lock up a number 2 seed, a number 1 seed, depending on what happens with the Saints or with the Packers. So I do like the idea, and hearing from Pete this week, I do like the idea of staying in that mode, keeping the players, not saying, okay, well, we're just fine with the third seed, so let's rest players going into this game. No, I want them to continue this momentum that they're kind of building over the last few weeks.
Yeah. If you have a shot, go for it. That's keeping your foot on the pedal and getting after it. And yes, I think they should do it. Now, we're all going to sit here and cross our fingers and hold our breath and hope that there's no injuries. I mean, that's what we're going to do.
Especially now that they're playing in Arizona instead of Santa Clara.
And that's the weirdest thing, isn't it? That there's only one team that's been displaced from their home.
And it's because of their local county government. It's not even it's not even the state of California.
Yeah. And I honestly think it's the will of the people of, the county that Santa Clara is in, whatever, county that is. I think they've just rejected their team. They're like, we just don't want you in here anymore. You're gross. Right. Go away.
Yeah. Fewer people here, the better, including our home football team.
Especially that team. Just gross. Go away. Bad enough of you.
It's a team that Russell Wilson is 13-4 against over the years. And a team that even Kyle Shanahan against the Seahawks is 2-5. So, that's one of the weirdest things to me. Going back to the Rams offense, where it seems like the defense struggles. And yet, Kyle Shanahan, I mean, this is kind of Shanahan's offense that McVay runs too. So why is Kyle Shanahan 2-5 against the Seahawks, and yet McVay is like 5-3?
I don't know. Shanahan is a very, how would I put it? I don't know what to think of Kyle Shanahan, right? I hear all the time about what a genius he is. And then I see him roll out his offense sometimes, and I'm like, that is creative. They do creative run stuff. That's kind of fun. He is pretty smart. And then yet the results of him being a head coach feels like the ultimate boom or bust coach to the Super Bowl or dumpster fire.
Well, I mean, to be fair to him, who of his quarterbacks been?
Don't be fair to him.
He's had Matt Ryan and Jimmy G. If you paired like a real quarterback with him, he'd probably be really good.
You think? Maybe? I don't know.
We'll see.
Once is a coincidence, twice is a trend.
I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably shouldn't knock him too much because they were the reason why the Seahawks weren't NFC West champions last year, too. And the other win was that overtime win in Santa Clara a while back. So I am a little bit concerned about this team because it's not like they've given up. You watch them against Arizona, mm-hmm. and they gave Kyler Murray all kinds of fits in that game, you know, with Jeff Wilson running the football, C.J. Beathard not turning the ball over. The thing about Beathard, Adam, is that he's not great, obviously. He's their third-string quarterback. But mm-hmm. you give him a clean pocket, he can make those easy throws that you expect, you know, everybody to make. To me, he's like Jared Goff light. If you don't pressure him, he makes those easy mm-hmm. throws. He's not as good at making those easy throws as Goff is. And he's also worse once you get him under pressure than Goff. He doesn't tend to throw the interception. So he does take care of the football.
He does. And having Kittle back helps. Also, too, I don't know how focused this Seahawks team's going to be going into this game. Like, what's worst case scenario if they lose? They're the third seed?
Yeah, the third seed. Right, exactly.
You know, because I don't know that seeding short of it's either the one seed or who cares.
No, I think there is something to the two seed because you're guaranteed to play at home the following week.
Who cares?
I guess, yeah. Well, it's funny hearing Pete, too, in the press conference. That's kind of his, because he was asked what it was going to be like playing the Niners down in Arizona. He's like, well, there's no people there, so they can put us wherever and we could play. It's really it doesn't make any difference.
It makes zero difference. This is the one weird year where that really doesn't make any difference. And so to me, it's kind of like, well, look, is it likely that we're going to get into that one seed? Not really.
I think the two seed is a possibility, though, because
who cares? You still have to win just as many games to go to the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter.
You do. I would just rather, I don't know. I would rather have the two seed than the three seed.
Why? Just because it's the two seed?
Yeah.
It makes literally no difference.
I would say it makes very little difference.
Okay. Yeah. Not enough to matter. Not enough to move the needle.
Yeah. And maybe not this year because, yeah, if they were playing at home in front of a crowd, then absolutely. But yeah, this is going to be the 49ers again, injuries, an issue. It's still going to be an issue. You mentioned Kittle being back, so that's good. I think Jeff Wilson is a good running back, and they do. You talk about the creative things that they do with the run. Mm-hmm. The strength of this defense has been stopping the run. And so with Brandon Ayuk out, with Deebo Samuel out in this game, I mean, who's they're going to really beat it for Beathard to throw to?
Yeah, I really don't care what the defense does in this game, to be honest, against the depleted Niners offense. I think if you're smart and you're Pete and you're Ken Norton, you just don't show anything on film. There's really no reason to let them do whatever it is they do. Who cares? But what I would like to see out of this game is I'd like to see the offense find a little bit of a rhythm.
Yeah.
And the passing game find its rhythm. I'd like to see Brandon Shellback in the lineup get tuned up and ready for the playoffs and just kind of see them find some consistency and give you a spark and make you feel good about it. Because I think if they come in and do perform against this Niners defense and put up 30 points or so, then you got to have a lot of confidence going into the playoffs. And I think that matters a lot more than what seed you are at this point.
Well, the other thing then that you have to be concerned about is you talked about where they are mentally. You have to be concerned, can they match the physicality that the 49ers have shown that they can bring? It's something you saw them be extremely physical against the Cardinals. So if they don't have a ton to play for, can this offense match the 49ers' defensive physicality?
Yes.
They can.
They've done it. Or you want to see that? Yes, they can. Okay. And they will. They've done it once this year already.
It's just, you know, when we're talking about injuries and trying to, you know, not show a lot, or you know, if you play not to get hurt, I feel like you're putting yourself in danger against this team.
Right. Yeah. No, offensively, I don't want them to take their foot off the pedal at all. Like I want them to go out there and establish their dominance. Once again, feel good about what they're doing and their concepts and having a rhythm and playing with tempo and Russ being in a groove like that. I would like to see that.
Couple things I'd like to see, some numbers to watch in this game. DK Metcalf just needs 6 yards to get past Steve Largent for the franchise single season receiving record. Tyler Lockett needs just 36 yards to make for two 1,000-yard receivers, the first time since 1995. And another thing Tyler can do with seven receptions is set the franchise record for receptions. He would pass Doug Baldwin and Bobby Engram, who had 94.
Interesting. Yeah, I would like to see Tyler get his numbers. It feels like he's been phased out a little bit, and maybe that's just because that knee's been kind of a problem all year. To see him have this productive of a season, despite, you know, suffering the knee injury earlier on, it's cool to see, man. What a warrior. Very proud of Tyler Lockett. He's a guy that love having on the team, and really, genuinely, that's a guy that you can say totally underrated in this league.
He's underrated. I feel like KJ Wright's underrated too. For the amount of time that he's been in the league, I don't think he gets enough credit.
He doesn't. Although there was that the one drive where they decided to take KJ out of the
right. Out of the play. I felt like that they focused on that though. Like that was their goal on that drive, and they succeeded. But you know, it succeeded up until the point of when they needed the fourth and one, and then KJ got the stop.
Right.
Or yeah, he was the one that blew up the play to get the stop.
Yeah. He got a catfish up the play stat.
Right. And one of those unofficial stats. Like, I don't think there's an FTUP that's in the Pro Football Reference column.
A FADOOP?
Yeah.
They need to add that right next to the column that says pancakes.
Get it together. All these advanced analytics people, they're the ones that need to do this.
Hey, you know, I've got the perfect person for it. Cynthia Freeland.
Hey.
She'd be great at that. Yeah. Give her something
to do.
Maybe
if you weren't such a jerk to her last show, then maybe she would be on board with us.
This is me still being a jerk to her. I want to give her some meaningless job that nobody cares about, tracking pancakes and foot ups.
That's not meaningless. Those are important stats.
Yeah. But at least she would be putting herself to some good use at that point, rather than whatever waste of time she's doing with her little computer in the corner.
You're such a jerk. There must not be anything else that you want to say about this Niners game.
I don't know. Did the Cynthia Freeland stuff make it into the last show, or did that get cut out?
I can't remember. I think it did make it in.
Okay, good. Well, we just didn't hear anything about it. I thought somebody would say something.
Is that about how much of a jerk you are?
Yeah.
More people need to tell Adam that he's a jerk.
Right. So to answer your question, no, there's not a lot more I wanted to talk about regarding the Glendale Robert Salas.
All right, let's get to the second half of the show. Getting into the second half of the show. You know, Adam, one of the really good things about the Seahawks winning this week, it means that all the things that we got for presents over the holidays, they all have good hakra.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yes, bless the Christmas presents with fantastic hakra.
Yeah, because then you have to wonder if you got them over Christmas and, you know, did I use them properly? And I know there was some concern from John the Bard Davison. We'll have his email later on. And so I just want to throw that out there so everybody knows.
Yeah, well,
I got this sweet hoodie from Clinton Bonner.
Yeah, I did enjoy the little flockers all posting in the Ring of Honor different Christmas gifts that they had received, and that was really fun, except for one alarming trend, in that most of it was predominantly action green.
That's alarming to you?
Yes. Know why? It's an accent color.
That's a you problem.
I don't think so. I don't know. I got more taste than just inside my mouth.
Well, there are some actual transactions to talk about over this last week. One of the biggest ones was when Snacks Harrison was put on the inactive list for the game. He was pretty vocal about wanting to be released from the team. And so that's one of the things that the Seahawks did on Monday. They released Snacks Harrison. And today we find out that it's the Green Bay Packers picking him up.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I was super perplexed by this. Like, really? Brian Monet comes back and you get rid of Snacks?
Monet. They weren't going to get rid of him. They just were going to... it's just that he probably wasn't going to figure into the rotation as much.
Well, I mean, at least suit him up. You can sit somebody else.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. I think they suited up Penny Hart for this game against the Rams instead of Snacks.
Yeah. I would rather have Snacks. I don't need Penny Hart. I know he's a nice dude and everybody really likes him, but, you know.
I think Monet's fine. And I actually think that Monet, at this point of his career, he's probably a better player than Snacks Harrison. I think
he's more versatile, but I think Snacks is much better against the run.
Sure.
And he kind of brought us something.
I felt like he did. If he wants to be gone, then I mean,
well, he only wanted to be gone because you stabbed him right in the back.
Well, it does. It pains me a little bit more now that I see that he's going to Green Bay.
Yeah, that makes me feel icky on the inside.
Well, does it make you feel any better that Luke Wilson's coming back? Did you not hear me?
Oh, I heard you.
Why are you giving me that look then?
Because you know why I gave you that look. No, it doesn't make me feel any better. He can stay at home and do his brosif thing there.
You don't know what he brings to this team, Adam.
Nothing. All he brings is short shorts now.
And Techno Thursday.
Yeah. All the bad things. What did was fellow brosif Jacob Hollister getting lonely?
Probably.
Was the Disley not enough for him?
I don't know.
I bet you Greg Olson rolled his eyes the second he read that transaction.
Really? I'm back now and you bring back Luke Wilson? Like, just as I'm coming back?
Yeah. That's not how this was supposed to go.
How about some credit to Greg Olson for making it back after having, what was it, a torn plantar fascia?
If there's one thing I know now, Brandon, after seeing Greg Olson make it back from this injury, I will never doubt anything he ever says again. Remember when he got injured and he was like, this is not the end of my season.
I'll be back. Yeah.
I'll be back. It was impassionate and just like, yeah, he's like, this is happening. And everybody was like, okay, Greg.
It's not like Pete Carroll telling you that maybe Daryl Taylor will make it back by the end of the season, or maybe Philip Dorsett will make it back by the end of the season.
No. Yeah. His demeanor regarding Daryl Taylor and him coming back this year, he's not coming back.
He's not coming back. And I think he even said that Philip Dorsett he said, I think maybe if it was a month from now, maybe he'd be more optimistic. But
right.
So that was the news.
Good job. That's good. You do better than most newscasters.
I don't know. You put in like 5 seconds of dead air after I asked what you thought about Luke Wilson coming back.
Don't ask dumb questions.
Which NFC East team do you want to be not in the playoffs?
Four. All of them.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. One of them has to get in.
But here's the thing. Because every time this happens, and it happens about once every 10 years, where a team that's sub 500 makes it into the playoffs and some 9-7 team does it and everybody goes, oh my God, change everything. This doesn't work. No, just stop it. Like, this happens every now and then. The system works very well. Knock it off.
Well, it's an East Coast team, so you aren't going to hear that crying this year.
No, somebody will. Okay. But look, I think it's probably going to be the Eagles who make it.
No, they're the one team that's been are they eliminated? Out.
This is how closely I follow the NFC East. I thought they all had
literally the
shot.
One team. You could have mentioned any other team, and the one team that you pick is the one that's been eliminated.
I didn't know the Cowboys were still in the league. I thought for sure they were eliminated.
Yeah.
I haven't been following the NFC standings.
Well, now. You don't really need to because, yes, it was the Eagles that lost last week and they fell to 4-10. They got beat by the Cowboys 37-17. Otherwise, yes, they probably would be in the picture for this week.
I can say for certain the team that I don't want to see is the Cowboys.
Too many weapons?
No, I just hate them.
No.
I hate that franchise. I think Jerry Jones is a scumbag. Their fan base stinks.
You wouldn't want to face them in the playoffs and just beat them down?
I don't care if we face them in the playoffs. I just don't want to see them in the playoffs. I don't want to see any sort of gratification come to that franchise at all.
So you'd be okay seeing the defensive line from Washington again?
Sure.
Okay. What about the Giants? The Giants that beat the Seahawks. Do you want to see them again?
Yeah. Wouldn't mind. They're the most blasé team out of that entire division somehow.
I would like to face the Giants again. Like, if they could get through the first round against, I guess it would probably be Tampa. If they could beat Tampa and you could somehow face that team in the second round, I would be all for it.
So is Tampa locked up? Are they in for sure? We should go through these playoff things because I actually haven't checked it.
You know I've checked it.
I know you have. That's why I said we should probably go through it. I'm trying to vindicate you here for all of your time and effort.
Okay, the teams that are a lock for the playoffs are obviously the Seahawks, Packers, Saints, and Tampa is a lock, but they aren't locked into the fifth seed. They could be the sixth. As long as Tampa wins, though, and they're playing the Falcons, then they'll be the five.
Okay. That's not a guarantee.
I know. Well, although the Falcons, they're in every game. They just can't find a way to win.
Well, the problem is that they're in the game, but Tom Brady is in their head.
Is in the Falcons' head?
Yes.
I don't know. Are any of those dudes left?
It doesn't matter. It just kind of...
I think everybody from the 28-3 game is gone now.
Yeah, well, they have this new beatdown that they get to deal with.
Well, the Falcons almost beat them just 2 weeks ago. That's one of the weird things about the way the schedule worked. These two teams just faced in week 15, and now here they are in week 17. Mm-hmm. This time it's in Tampa. So, yeah, Tampa's in. I feel pretty comfortable saying that they're going to face the winner of the NFC East.
Okay.
And then the other three teams that are jockeying to get in are the Chicago Bears. They have to play the Packers, Arizona, and LA, and they play each other.
Right.
Is there anything you need to know about the combinations? Like if this happens, because one of the things that I did work out is that Seattle gets the 2 seed if they win and either the Packers or the Saints lose. Mm-hmm. Or if both of them lose, then they get the number 1 seed. But
right.
They could land in that number 2 seed. They would play the 7th seed, if that's the case. And yeah, then they would get the home game the next week, which would be huge if Chicago can beat the Packers. This is why I think it makes a big difference in terms of seeding. If Chicago can beat the Packers, they get in. And then if, you know, all the teams that are supposed to win the next week actually win, then Seattle would have the Packers at home. And so you say it doesn't matter where they play, but I would rather that Seahawks-Packers game be in Seattle rather than Lambeau, fans or not.
Yeah, weather-wise, maybe.
Yeah. So don't tell me It doesn't matter where they play.
Yeah, I guess that's probably the only stadium where it matters just because of the weather. I'll give you that. But overall, like, it doesn't much matter because you're going to have to win 3 games. And you're going to have to beat the Packers along the way.
Probably.
So whenever it is that you get them, wherever it is that you get them, like you got to get it done.
I mean, the Packers, they could end up losing in the first round if they lose to the Bears.
I don't know what to make of that team.
The Packers?
Yes.
I think they're good. Aaron Rodgers is having a good year.
He's having a good year, but they're a one-trick pony. Triple Devontae Adams, and their defense is whatever.
So why hasn't any other team been able to triple Devontae Adams?
No freaking clue.
Like, you know where Aaron Rodgers is going to throw the football, and yet Devontae Adams has huge week after huge week.
Yeah. Wait, I mean, what are we Mickey Mousing around with here? I don't understand.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't. I mean,
Aaron Rodgers is having that good of a year.
Look, I understand that pretty much every single defensive coach in the NFL has probably forgotten more football in the last 3 minutes than I've ever known in my whole life. But this one seems like they might be out thinking the room here a little bit.
It's like this next game coming up against the Niners. You put 3 guys on George Kittle and you don't let him catch the football. Make someone else beat you.
They took George Kittle out of the last game.
Hey, we have 2021 opponents, Adam.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Do you want to know?
No. We got an offseason to go over that stuff.
All right.
Save some stuff for the offseason, man.
It's news. We're in the news section of the show.
Right. You don't have to report all the news.
Now people are going to be sitting there. And they're going to have, instead of jumping to your keyboard, here's the schedule.
Make people actually earn their work here. Make them do it.
I'm going to put it in the show notes. That way they don't have to go very far.
I want them to bootstrap themselves up and find out the 2021 opponents on their own. Bootstraps.
It's not a time for bootstraps. We need to be helping people. This is a time for giving.
The holidays are over. Let it go.
Still got New Year's.
Yeah. Probably the most important holiday this year, right? Of 2020.
The end of the year.
Yeah.
Closing it out.
Yeah.
Well, before the break, Adam, you asked me if I cut out one of the things that you mentioned in a previous show. And the reason why you asked me that, there are things that I look for to cut out every single week. One, it's the least compelling conversation because I had to think about it. Last week, I did cut something out, and it was our conversation about Brian Schottenheimer going to the Texans and coaching Deshaun Watson. This isn't a Texans podcast. I cut most of that out.
Oh, well, that's good. That was better for everybody.
Yeah. And then number two is whatever you say that will get the show canceled. That's the second thing.
And to be fair, I don't think you have to do that very often.
It's true.
Maybe one in three shows.
You know what? I may never have to do it because we have our members of the flock. If they're paying to support the show and they get into this exchange knowing you, then, you know, they get what they get.
They get what they get. Now, the other thing is, too, is like if we were to be quote unquote canceled, like really all that means is that we'd get lots of angry comments from the interweb. Right. But we could still just put out the show if we wanted.
Well, I think it would mean that people were so fed up that they're like, I'm canceling my Patreon subscription to you guys.
Oh, yeah. No, see, I don't think the little flockers would do that for about anything, for the most part.
For the most part. And we have new ones coming on each week. This week, we have Eric Kaltschmidt coming in at 12:12. He says, hey, guys, Eric from Kalispell, Montana here.
Hey.
I've been listening to the podcast for a few years now, well past the 2-year provided free loading window. And I was instantly hooked due to our shared Montana roots and love for the Hawks. The freeloading wasn't hard initially, but each day it weighed on my soul a little more. This year, I entered the Pick'em League on my freeloading status, and the guilt continued to weigh heavier yet. I finally couldn't take it anymore when my first place finish in week 12 was announced by Brandon. So I'm officially paying my dues and part of the flock, and it sure feels good. Maybe this added boost of Hawkra will finally push Russell Wilson and the Hawks to defeat the Rams and earn their first NFC West Divisional Championship. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and go Hawks! Eric and Kalispell, a.k.a. Still Dangerous.
Well, go Hawks, Eric, a fellow Cali kid. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Has he come by your house yet?
No, not yet.
No? Okay. I was just up there like yesterday, too.
I know. You could have come by my house and didn't.
Well, no, I could have come by Eric's house though and like done a drive-by snowballing or something.
Oh, that's true. I may have
just thrown a snowball at his house, yelled "Go Hawks!" and drove away real fast. It'd have been fun.
Did Eric win that week of Pick'em? I'm gonna have to go back and look because I went through and did all the prizes and I don't remember him coming up in week 12.
I don't know. Well, he says he did. You better send him something.
I guess I better now that we got his 12-12.
Yeah, it's a dangerous precedent that's set, though. Like, now you could just write it in the show and be like, I won. Give me something.
I announced I win. Now give me my prize.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
It's kind of fun that way.
All right, yeah. Eric, I will send you something. Gosh.
Well, you better. He's a winner. He told you so.
Oh, you know what? It was Eric with a K that won week 12. Oh, well, he spells his name with a K, too. See, this is very confusing.
Yeah, might be the same Eric, even.
No, it's not, because that Eric has not been a long-term freeloader, and he's been with us since show number one.
Oh, okay. Well, see, I'm not looking at it, so I don't know.
Well, you know Eric.
Well, I know Eric, but now you've got all sorts of Erics. You got K's and C's and people from over here and people who won and didn't.
Okay, Spies is Spies, and then now we have new Eric from Kalispell.
All right, there we go. That totally lines everything out for me.
Well, see, there we go. We got this sorted out. Eric from Kalispell getting a prize. It's settled.
Who knew that all the Erics would be more confusing than all the Brandons?
I'm going to make this equal opportunity. Anybody from Kalispell who joins at 12 and above will get a prize.
There we go. Okay.
Bridget Pernovos coming in at 145.44. She's upping from the $3 a month to the $12.12 a month for the annual pledge. So thanks to Bridget for the raise.
That's awesome. Really appreciate that, Bridget. It's fun having her in the Discord. That was a good time.
Yeah, now she's in the Ring of Honor too.
Yeah.
Henrik Will also coming in with a raise and editing his pledge up to €5.
Whoa.
Yeah. See, everybody overseas, not everybody, at least people in UK and in Europe, they can switch their pledges over to their actual currency now. So some people doing that. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, that is pretty sweet. Again, I would take gold.
Pounds of gold.
Pounds of gold.
So big thanks to our new member of the flock, Eric, and thanks for the raises from everybody. Getintheflock.com. Also, thanks to our executive producers, Dustin Mock and Brian Shaw, and a new executive producer this week. I'm putting him in this group as well, Young Choi, because the patches showed up, Adam. We got a full box of patches now.
That's awesome. People love their patches. And now we have a, what is the word? Is it triumvirate of executive producers?
How about a triforce?
Ooh, the triforce of it. I like that better. That has a ring. And Young's the guy to complete that. I feel that strongly.
We've completed the triforce. The triforce is strong. Now we're going into the postseason. And Young's just going to be an executive producer for the next month because of his support for the show, bringing the patches in.
Yeah.
All right, we got a pick'em update. DKO won this week. Pepper. This is the West Coast Pepper. See, we got East Coast Pepper. We got West Coast Pepper. This is the West Coast Pepper. I have to differentiate so there's no confusion. 14 picks correct.
Yeah, it's funny. I would not have guessed that Pepper would be one of the names that we'd have Eric-type problems with.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
That, this is how you know the show is just exploding, because we're all the way down to Pepper being a common name for the show.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to West Coast Pepper. It was West Coast Pepper, right? That West, ended up with the... Yeah. Yeah. Good job by you.
And he picked everyone correctly except for Cleveland over the Jets. I think everybody missed that one. And then he only missed the Washington game. So big run of picks, getting 14 right.
Pretty awesome. Like, I think a lot of people were surprised by the Jets pick, obviously. And if you were a Jets fan, is that just like one more kick in the balls?
Yeah. Now you're not going to get Nordic Jesus as your quarterback.
Most likely not.
I mean, I guess it could still happen, because I think there's three good quarterbacks that everybody's got pegged for the top three this year.
Yeah. Do you know Chris Larkham from high school? Was that somebody that you know? He was a year younger than us. Okay. Well, he's a buddy of mine. He's the only Jets fan I know. And I think when it comes time to like draft coverage and everything, he's a character.
Yeah.
I think we should bring him on.
Okay.
And just, yeah, I think it'd be fun, because that literally is the worst team to be a fan of, I'm pretty sure. I think they've supplanted the Browns.
Yeah. Well, somebody has to be that team.
Yeah.
Shoot, our Seahawks were that team for the early 90s.
I don't know.
Who else was it?
Yeah, there were the Cardinals. Well,
the Chargers were pretty bad.
Yeah.
Patriots were pretty bad for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't us.
No, it wasn't.
I don't think the Seahawks have ever had the number one overall pick, actually. I think the Rick Meyer pick was the highest pick apart from the inaugural season.
Yeah.
Because I think the Bucs got the one overall in the 76 season.
That's correct.
And then, yeah, it was the Rick Meyer pick was the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
Look at that, Brandon. We've never been the suckiest.
Knock on the wood. Knock on the wood.
But we're not going to be this year.
No.
Yeah.
But it could be coming. So you got to be careful.
Well, I mean, if they play football for another million years, it's pretty much statistically likely.
No, never going to happen. The Seahawks are going to be the one team that avoids it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
One team hanging on to the top spot in the pick'em, Christian. And I don't know if I can say your team name without getting us canceled. So 168 points for you, Christian, in Norway.
Hey, Christian, how does it feel to be selectively edited?
Now you know how Adam feels.
Yeah, that's how I feel about every other week.
We got Collier Greens at number two. That's Dan Weinholz with 166 points, along with Jonathan Burkholder, and once more into the breach, which is Mark. So yeah, those guys fighting it out for the top spot over these next few weeks through the playoffs. Keep getting your picks in. And somebody needs to jump ahead of Dan so Dan's not engraving his own champion knife. Although that would be kind of cool too, because he's been supporting the show and making that prize for all these years.
Well, it's a little like Eric just declaring himself a winner. Like, if you carve out your own championship knife, if you engrave your own knife, that's pretty cool. I like that move. It's a power move.
Just do it now, Dan. Like, carve out your, call your shot now. It's like getting the Super Bowl 55 tattoo right now.
Yeah, Babe Ruthish. Catfish! Start pointing to the stands and carve your name on that knife.
Moving on. Let's get to some trivia from Jeremy, Adam.
Okay.
What's up, guys? The question from last week was, name the Seahawks' top five career rushing leaders. And you all were both correct that Sean Alexander is first. He's first by a mile, actually. He has over 9,000 yards, which is crazy considering his career as a Seahawk was only, I think, 7 years. And next up, you all both said Marshawn, but that is incorrect. The second place is interesting because the second place career rusher is only 1 yard. 1 yard ahead of the third place career rusher, and neither of them are Marshawn Lynch. So, Alexander's first with 9,400 yards. Second is Chris Warren with 6,706. Third is Kurt Warner with 6,705. Fourth is Marshawn at 6,381. And then fifth, you all both said was Russell, but that is incorrect. John Williams, Brandon had mentioned, was next. And Brandon, like you said, he has almost as many receiving yards as rushing yards. He's only off by 400 yards. He has 4,500 rushing yards. Russell is sixth currently. However, he is very close to passing John Williams. He's 109 yards or so behind. So he might knock that down this season, but if not, early next season. Anyways, the question for next week, I've got some bigger ones in the works, but, busy here with the holiday season. So my question this week is kind of a brief one, but it's playoff bound since the Seahawks qualify for the playoffs. There are only five NFC teams that Russ has never played in the playoffs. Who are they? What are the five NFC teams Russ has never played in the playoffs? Go Hawks!
Go Hawks. All right.
We had talked about this last week because his call came in just after you and I finished up recording. And we had talked about whether or not playoffs would be included. So clearly, playoffs not included. Otherwise, it would be Sean number one, Beast number two. Then I think Kurt Warner would be number three. Chris Warren would be four. And then I think Russ would be number five if you include playoff rushing yardage. But obviously not. And a tip to Jeremy, because I can tell that you are not a fan of the Seahawks in the 80s because you're referring to him as John Williams, John L. Williams. You always got to include the middle initial when you're talking John L. Williams.
Yeah, he was the most regal of all the running backs. You have to have the middle initial in there.
Got to have it. Otherwise, people will know. People will know that you were not watching the Seahawks in the 80s.
It's a tell. It doesn't matter if you were born or not then either. Like, right. You still got to add that L in. But it is nice to kind of validate the theory of Russ being high up on the list, you know, with his rushing acumen and the way football's played these days. So, I thought we did pretty good on that, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Without knowing if it was playoffs or regular season and all that. Now, the five teams that Russ has not played in the playoffs.
The five NFC teams that Russ has not played in the playoffs.
Okay. We can kind of go back and forth here. I'm going to say the Bucks first.
I will say, the Bucks is correct. Another team that they haven't played in the postseason, I'm going to say, I don't think that Russ has faced the Cardinals in the postseason.
Did you say Russ or just the Seahawks ever?
It was Russ.
Yeah, I think we have missed them in the playoffs somehow.
It would have only been in the Arians years probably that they would have made it and we haven't.
Right.
I'm trying to think of... I don't know if they've played the Rams in the... No, we've missed the Rams, too, in the Russ era.
So that puts us at three. Bucks, Rams, Cards?
Hasselbeck era, we had a couple games with the Rams, but not in the Russ era.
I'm going to throw the Bears in there.
The Bears, that one... Ooh, that
We have... Russ has not played the Bears in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. That was Hasselbeck era, because that was after the Beastquake game that they played the Bears.
That's exactly right.
And then it would be the Giants, probably, would be the fifth one.
Correct. I think we nailed it. Thanks for being kind this week, Jeremy.
If you want to be part of the mailbag, you can go to SeahawkersPodcast.com, click on the contact link, or you can come in through, I think this one was through Facebook. Leon Refleur says, "Dear Adam, I hereby inform you that I am fully backing you up in regard to the last show. What you were saying was exactly what I was feeling after the game. I was just so mad and frustrated because of that poor, conservative performance in the second half. That was just not a champion-like attitude, and I have seen those games way too often throughout the years. Anyway, Merry Christmas, you two. I love the show, and catfish the Rams."
That was the best Christmas present I could have gotten right there. I appreciate that, man. Because, yeah, I just wanted to get it off my chest how disappointed I was last week and obviously feeling better this week. And I know there was somebody in the YouTube comments that was sad that I was sad. I'm sorry about that, man. But it's not like we got a huge offensive improvement, but it felt a little better. And I gave you my case as to why I feel like maybe they're about ready to light it up for the playoffs. So go Hawks, man. Let's hope it happens.
Brian from Windsor, Ontario comes in through the website, says, "Hey guys, another great win and one more NFC West title. What a fun game to watch, and that much better of a win over the Catfish Rams." With that being said, this left me with a couple questions. One, with Carson playing the way he has been, where do you stack him up against Beast Mode? Two, do we really need Penny anymore? And if not, what could we get for him? Love you guys, and I leave you with one giant catfish. The Rams. Go Hawks.
Nice. That's the exact way you should end that email. As far as Carson versus Beast Mode, it's not even close. I love Chris Carson, and I love his play, but not nearly as consistent in health, not nearly as impactful in terms of the attitude of the team and the culture and all that. But I love Chris Carson. Is Penny necessary? Yes, because we're going to need him next year when we don't re-sign Carson. So
I wonder if they do re-sign Carson.
It's all about the numbers, of course. But I mean, if he's looking for a big deal, ain't happening.
I wonder with his injury history, if he's going to get the kind of big deal that would draw him away to another team.
It's we talk about this all the time. And Paul Richardson's a great example of this. Why would another team actually like pony up big money for him? Blah, 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 blah. His injury history, all
and
that.
They did,
right?
Yeah.
And they did. Somebody's going to do it. There's going to be some dumbass GM out there that, you know, gives Carson a Zeke Elliott type contract.
Well, the thing that I'm at least getting the sense of from Pete Carroll and the team is that they would not be willing to go there.
Right.
I'm happy to at least be getting that sense. Now, if he got a contract that was, I don't know, under Kamara and under, who are all the other running backs that got paid?
Zeke Kamara, yeah. Gurley. I think those were kind of the, David Johnson. I can't believe that name popped into my head. Those those four guys.
Yeah, I thought there was one more back that got paid here recently too, but yeah.
Well, Melvin Gordon got paid a little.
Oh man, if they got him for Melvin Gordon money, I'd be stoked.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
They have to pay him more than Melvin Gordon money. That, like, if it's between those, then I think that's probably where you say, okay.
So where we landed here was somewhere between Melvin Gordon and
the other guy that you can't think of his name.
Right, that guy.
I think there would be some people upset that if he got 9 or 10 mil a year.
I would hope a little less than that because my concern, and not only that, but I don't know where the cap's going the next few years.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
That seems really up in the air with all the corona stuff and the economy and no fans and
that
owners.
That might be tough. Yeah. You're right. He's probably gone. And so we need Penny next year.
Yeah.
All right, Adam. Well, I'm doing something a little bit different this week because I normally read John's email in an English accent.
Yeah.
I have a fancy new program that translates John's email into a dude with a British accent.
This is going to be fun.
Hi, fellas, and a happy new year. Well, it will be, now that we have won the division. The win against the Rams gave me less stress than the one against the football team. It is a much different side to the one, say, 6 weeks ago as the defense have decided to play. I have to give a mention to DJ Reed and LJ Collier as they have impressed me, but I have to give a shout out to Jamal Adams, who is running all over the place like a wrecking ball as well. We had the Rams game live last night, so it was a late night, an early morning actually, but was well worth it. I watched the game in my Christmas present, which was a fabulous gift from Greg and Lisa Carlson in the shape of a number 14 Metcalf shirt, so a massive shout out to them too. I am claiming that the good game from DK was all down to my shirt except for the penalty when he wasn't set. I took it off after the game and then realized that I have a problem. I saw that I had left the tags on it, so went to cut him off. Then I stopped as I realized that it might interfere with the Horcrux. I need some advice. Cut him off or leave him on. Answer, please, and go Hawks.
Okay, that can never happen again, because I thought you said it was an English accent, not a robot accent.
It was a British robot accent.
What I just heard there is what the robot overlords are going to sound like when AI takes over the planet. That's what I heard in that. I don't even know what the email said at this point. I just got scared.
It said that John got a present from Greg and Lisa, a 14 Metcalf jersey. And so he was sending thank you to them, but he didn't get, he realized that the tags were still on the jersey. And so is it, and one of the things that scares me a little bit is that robot British guy picked up on the word Hawkra and pronounced it perfectly.
I know.
So that's concerning.
It was too good. This is why I say it. I never want to hear that again. That voice is going to haunt my dreams now.
So he's wondering, is it bad for the Hawkra to clip the tags off now that he's worn it and we got the win against the Rams?
It doesn't matter. We're all doomed to be slaves to the robots.
It also doesn't. I think what John was picking up on is that DK had that penalty in the game. I think it was John's bad Hawkra, but by not clipping the tags off, that John was then responsible for the DK illegal shift penalty.
See, and I think this is where the answer actually lies. So exactly like you said, because the jersey wasn't tidy, right? Like he left the mess of the tags on there.
Yeah.
It allowed for, you know, kind of a disturbance in the field of Hawker around DK and caused him to have the penalty. So if he just cleans up the jersey, takes off the tags, we'll have perfect clean performances from DK going forward.
So there you go. And I guess I can never play that robot voice on the show again.
Never.
On to do better and better at life.
The do better is for you. Never play that again. I'm shook.
You're just never going to recover for the rest of the show.
No. No, but for seriousness, my do better this week is for the website FanSided. And I would get mad at the author of this article, but They don't seem to list who the author is.
They don't get bylines?
No, and I don't blame them because I'd be ashamed of this catfish too. Here's the title of the story. Quote, the story of the Seahawks' last 8 years if they never drafted Russell Wilson. Who gives a
catfish?
You want to know why nobody gives a
catfish?
Because it didn't happen. They drafted Russell Wilson. That's what happened. The story of the last 8 years is the Seahawks drafted Russell Wilson. They've won a Super Bowl, lost another, and are about to win another one. Like, I just don't understand this what if crap. I hate it to start with. And not only do they do what if for just like 1 year, 8 years of what ifs. Knock it the
catfish
off. I hate this article. I hate the what ifs. It doesn't matter because we drafted Russell Wilson. He's ours. Quit trying to take him away from us, even in fantasy land. Do better.
So they go year by year, like what would have happened in 2012?
I don't know. I didn't read it. I was so mad.
You saw the headline and you're like, screw this guy. And you went to go find out who wrote it. And you're like, oh, they won't even say who wrote it. Screw the whole website.
Yes. They know what they did.
Now I kind of want to go read it. Now I'm going to give them a click.
Well, that's on you.
You can't even save us a click, Adam.
I know. Not only that, but I had to click on it twice. I clicked on it once to try to see the byline a week or so ago when this was going to be my do better. Now I had to click on it again to pull it up so that I could read the headline. I gave him two clicks, but I didn't give him any of my time. So
you only read the headline. See, Twitter won't even let you do this. You can't even retweet a thing without saying, you know, oh, it looks like you didn't click through to read the article. Are you sure you want to retweet?
Jeez, really? That happens on Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I don't know if they stopped doing that, but it was that way a couple weeks ago because I know I was because I saw an article that I knew I had read and I clicked the retweet and it asked me that. I was like, how do you know I didn't read it?
This seems like a policy instituted by the creepy British robot overlord.
You get rid of that dude.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he made his last appearance on the show.
Okay, good.
John, from now on, will either be read by another creepy robot dude or me.
Oh, okay.
Or John could just call in 253-235-9041. Come on, John.
Yeah, because I can't have that in my life anymore. I can't take you doing the impersonation, though. I do enjoy that.
Okay.
But I know that's a lot of work for you. And so whatever you want to do.
takes a little bit out of me every single time.
It does.
My do better this week. It comes with an assist from Jake, one of our members of the flock. He comes in with an email, says, "Hey, fellas, food for thought. The head ref for Sunday's game against the Rams was also the head ref during the Rams versus Saints NFC Championship a couple years ago. A few questionable calls and spots throughout the game. I seem to remember a player, quote unquote, giving himself up as he rolled out of his dive and set the ball down all in one motion. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but it seems like Bill Vinovich might be the NFL's we need the LA to work guy. Here's to hanging a new banner. Go Hawks," from Jake.
Go Hawks, Jake. And I want to say he also like has LA ties. Like either he lives there currently or lived there at some point or something like that. Yeah,
I think this came up in the Saints matchup, right? That he had some kind of LA tie.
Yeah. So
yeah, this is, it's disturbing that he brought it up. And it's still disturbing to me days after this officiating call, the one that was made on Sunday, and he referenced it, the giving himself up call. I went back at him and I watched as Josh Reynolds made that catch and rolled on the ground as part of the process of making the catch. He's not touched. There was no whistle. He rolls to his feet and puts the ball on the ground. What's another term for putting the ball on the ground? A freaking fumble. We all know what he was trying to do, but the way he did it, that was a mental error by the receiver. The officials shouldn't be there to bail out mental errors by players. You have DK Metcalf rocking in his stance ever so slightly as the ball was snapped. It was a mental error, or maybe slightly physical. There was no advantage to be gained, but the officials chose to throw the flag there. So technically the correct call, we mentioned that before, but you know, they could have given him the benefit of the doubt the way that they gave Reynolds the benefit of the doubt. So, Adam, I want to bring a few pieces of evidence into this discussion just to show that we're not complete homers with this particular call. One, we won.
I don't even need the evidence because I saw it with my eyes, and we can go through the evidence. I want to, but I saw it with my eyes, and that wasn't giving yourself up. Giving yourself up is like when a quarterback slides, or I've seen a running back go down on purpose before the goal line not to score because of clock management things, or it's obvious when somebody gives themselves up.
Yeah, they take a knee or they slide.
Giving yourself up. That was making the catch and then just dropping the ball for no reason. That's a fumble. You're right.
Yes, he was spotting the ball for the refs, but let's go to the rule book. Is spotting the ball for the refs considered downing the football? No, it says in Rule 7, Section 2, Article 1, Part 4, an official shall declare the ball dead and the down ended when a runner declares himself down by, let's go to number two first, because it wasn't this, sliding feet first on the ground. When a runner slides feet first, the ball is dead the instant he touches the ground with anything other than his hands or his feet. So we know it wasn't that because he didn't slide to the ground. The other act that declares the ball dead is falling to the ground or kneeling or clearly making no immediate effort to advance. So he wasn't falling to the ground to declare himself down. He was completing the process of the catch. Because if falling to the ground during the catch is giving yourself up, then no receiver could ever get up and advance the football without being touched.
Exactly.
It wasn't kneeling because, you know,
wasn't kneeling.
Yeah, he stood up and put it on the ground. What he should have done was kneel as he placed the football. That would have been the right way to do it. So it leaves us with the officials saying that he clearly made no immediate effort to advance the football. So how clear was it? One, it wasn't clear enough to blow the whistle. If they would have blown the whistle, then the play would have been over. It wasn't clear enough to Coach McVay because he had to run out onto the field and take a 15-yard penalty to make his case with the refs. And three, it certainly wasn't clear enough to the Rams' own home radio announcers, J.B. Long and Maurice Jones-Drew.
Goff on third and two. Steps up and deals middle. Low throw going to the ground to make the catch. It's Reynolds. No. He was not touched down by contact. He left it behind him to be spotted. And it's going to go down as a fumble recovery for the Seahawks to end the game. Wow. And there's an injury on the field. He is definitely not touched. He put the ball down to be spotted. He was already between the hash marks. He was trying to get into hurry-up mode.
Was he touched there?
Bobby Wagner clip him on the helmet?
I don't think so. I don't think there's a a bailout call to be made here.
Yeah, they already had one earlier.
Yeah.
Oh, not even close.
Yeah.
He wasn't touched.
I think what happened...
The runner gave himself up. After the play was over, unfortunate conduct, offensive bench. It'll be first and 10 after the 15-yard penalty.
Wow.
Wow, they're saying he gave himself up?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take it. I don't agree with it, but I'll take it.
So there you go. The Rams' own home radio crew saying that the Seahawks got screwed by the call. So for Bill Vinovich, stop making calls that are so clearly and obviously benefiting the Rams, covering up for mental mistakes by a player who made a clear mistake, and do better.
100% right, 0% wrong, because I love the idea that the announcers were like, there's no way, there's no bailout call for us here. Au contraire. Bill Vinovich does have one for you. Here it is. He's going to make up a new way to declare yourself that you've given up.
Yeah, by placing the ball on the ground. By fumbling the football is now giving yourself up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you willfully fumble the football, you have now given up on the play. That's what the rule should state.
Well, that would explain the Jared Goff fumble then earlier. That he gave up there before he got to the goal line.
Right.
And my other favorite part was when Pete Carroll was asked about it on his 710 interview on Monday. Michael Bumpus incorrectly identified the player as being Robert Woods. And Pete's answer was, Robert was a Trojan. He wouldn't have done that.
Right? Yeah. Because it's a bonehead play. It was a fumble.
Yeah.
But whatever.
But he got bailed out. Fortunately, it did not come in a loss. It came in a win. So that play will never be talked about until it's actually in a consequential game. And mm-hmm. then it'll make for some new rule to where the Rams are actually able to do that.
But even with the cheating refs, the Rams still couldn't beat us.
Even with that.
Yeah.
On to Better at Life. And I'm going to continue here. Because my Better at Life this week is for the Titans. And apparently they had a player, Will Compton. His haircut was so bad that the Titans decided to add Compton to the injury report, saying that his Shelby-style haircut, which is a reference apparently to some TV show from the 1900s, his haircut was so bad that the social media team for the Titans put Compton down on the injury report as doubtful because of a bad haircut. So I thought that was funny. Titans social media team, better at life than Skip Bayless.
What is also funny is that was about this close to being my better at life this week. Because I thought that was also hilarious. Yeah.
Bad haircuts that will land you in the Skip Bayless slot every single time.
Yeah. The doubtful. For bad haircut. I like it. Funny stuff, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for the entire Seattle Seahawks organization. And as I sat and I thought about the fact that they clinched the NFC West title and everything that had gone into that, how long it had been, a couple of years since we had a title.
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah. And to do it over the Rams. And then not only that, but to overcome everything that they've had to overcome this season, listening to Russell Wilson's press conference and, kind of reflect back on everything they've had to deal with this year in how difficult of a year it's been off the field, whether it's social issues or Corona or you name it, right? I mean, go down the list. This year has been a challenge and they've knocked it out of the park to this point in the season with the Corona stuff. I mean, I think they're the only team to not have a player miss time because of the vid to this point.
Yeah, Brian Monet was on the list for having a close contact. And other than that, no positive tests.
Yeah, I think that is amazing. It really is outstanding. And then also, too, for Pete and John to do the things that they've done. I mean, give John credit for going out and getting Dunlap and bringing in Jamal Adams. And then give Pete a ton of credit, too, for some of the things that we criticize him about, right? Like some of his philosophy about ball and things like that. Sure, that's all fine and dandy. But as far as a motivator, as far as a culture builder, as far as a family maker, I mean, he's amazing. I mean, listen to Jamal Adams talk this week in all his interviews about what he's encountered here. in Seattle and how unique it is, and former players and current players. Like, it really is a testament to the way that he motivates and pulls guys together. And this season is a great example of it. All the distractions, all the hardships, and then to come away with the NFC West title, to have a shot at the one seed going into the last week of the year, and yet another playoff berth during the Russell Wilson era. The entire Seattle Seahawks organization, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah. NFC West title, and they get it done. And Adam, you know, that was one of the things that I was looking at, just how many years, because it's felt like a long drought of not having an NFC West title.
I know.
and that it's been only 3 years. So I went back and looked at it, and you look at the other teams in the division. The 49ers went 13 years between NFC West titles. The Cardinals, they didn't even have a title in the NFC West until, you know, Bruce Arians got him one. And then every single time, they've had like 5 or 6 years in between. So they're one of the fewest. And then the Rams, it was like they've had a stretch of 8 years. So, yeah, what are we complaining about? Three long years without an NFC West title.
Right. It's almost like being a Broncos fan and complaining about not having a franchise quarterback, right?
Right.
Like, you've had one for basically the last 40 years,
yeah,
right?
Going back to Elway.
Yeah, it is funny. I did count it up the other day, and I don't remember what the actual total was, but I think the other three, the four racket teams, they combined have two more NFC West titles than we do since we entered the division in
02. In 2002, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, what are we complaining about? I'm not. I said better at life than Skip Bayless to the entire Seattle Seahawks organization. Super stoked about this NFC West title. Super stoked to be going into the playoffs. It's been a tumultuous year. This is our last podcast of this year, but I'm grateful for it.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. We gotta change everything. This doesn't work, man.